Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty.
Good evening and welcome to another edition, the last edition of the 2020 calendar year. It's Sports Night that comes to you each and every Monday night. Dalton Erwig and his wife Vicky are taking care of his new bundle of joy, Peyton. Want to congratulate Dalton on becoming a new father once again to a healthy baby girl. And we miss Dalton here on Sports Night. But I have my producer extraordinaire here who has his Atlanta Falcons apparel on. And if you heard his rant that he made earlier in the season prior to the Atlanta Falcons shaking their staff up, it's none other than Ian Blair. Ian, good evening, and always a pleasure to join you.
Good evening, Corey, and of course, everybody else out there listening, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. As always, if you want to get in on the conversation, you can call or text us at 251-343-0106. Corey, we have a lot to get into, a lot of updates, a lot of different news, but first, some roster shakeups, specifically in the coaching in the SEC.
Yeah, 1 week ago, we were here on this show trying to figure out who wanted to coach the Auburn Tigers. Would they find their head coach? Because we knew multiple coaches turned the position down or, due to conflicting media reports, were never offered the job. But at the end of the day, you just didn't know who was going to be the next head coach of the Auburn Tigers and lead them forward, especially coming off of National Signing Day. And on Tuesday, the Auburn Tigers hired 44-year-old Brian Harsin. And he's the head football coach, or was the head football coach at Boise State, was 69-19 in 7 seasons at Boise, made 6 bowl appearances. And Harsin is a former Boise State quarterback, and his mentality in his press conference last week was just be 1-0 every day. He did not shy away from the Iron Bowl rivalry that everyone wanted to ask him about and talk about, because you want to make that splash as a head coach, but he wants to focus on the Auburn Tigers. And I think this is a good hire for Auburn. I think that their athletic director, Alan Green, went out on a limb, and this is Alan Green's hire. It does not have a lot to do with the boosters, does not have a lot to do with alumni. This was Alan Green's guy, I think, from the word go, and this is who Auburn has hired as their next head football coach, and I actually think it's a good hire.
You know, one of the things that we have constantly talked about here is establishing not only a good coaching staff, but also a good culture. Matter of fact, a great culture. And one thing that I want to point out here is that Brian Harsin, overall, as a head coach at Boise State, was 69-19 overall. You got to look to reset. I think Auburn just overall was looking for a reset on their approach to their athletic program. And I will say, personally, I don't think this is really a quote-unquote game changer by any stretch of the imagination, but it is the first step in the right direction that I have seen Auburn take in quite some time.
Well, you're looking at a situation to where Auburn is preparing for its New Year's Day game against Northwestern in the Citrus Bowl. And as they continue preparations, I think it's good that he has an opportunity to not only interview some of the current staff members. It'll be interesting to see how many of the current staff members that are part of this Auburn Tiger family will remain on his staff. Will it be Carnell Cadillac Williams, who's coaches the running backs? Will it be Kevin Steele, who is the defensive coordinator and who a lot of people thought would be given the job, but all these hashtags and the movements that were started on Twitter and social media to me really kept Kevin Steele from becoming the next head coach in Auburn? And will he still want to be around the Auburn football program as the defensive coordinator, knowing that he did not have an opportunity to be the head coach? So that's something that I think is going to be very interesting to see as it moves forward. And Auburn still has a lot of work to do. When you start talking about their New Year's bowl game with Northwestern, they want to kind of catapult themselves the right way in the 2021, and there's a lot of signees yet to be continue to sign the dotted line for the Auburn Tigers, as the second national signing day will be in February. So those loose recruits out there who, because of the COVID-19 pandemic, have not had an opportunity to even be on Auburn's campus, and much less have an opportunity to meet the new head football coach at Auburn face-to-face, because they can't do that due to the pandemic. So he has a lot of work to do, but you're right. I think the biggest thing for the new head football coach is going to be getting a staff in place and creating relationships, because most of Coach Harsin's relationships are dealing in the West Coast. He doesn't have a lot of Southern roots and the Southern ties, and we all know the type of talent that comes out of the state of Alabama and Georgia and Mississippi and Louisiana, not to mention Tennessee. So you don't want to miss the landmark and the dynamics that are in the Southeastern Conference and have to strictly recruit on the West Coast.
Well, I would say that Carnell Williams and Kevin Steele most likely should stay. One, because Carnell is still learning the flow of the game from the other side of the ball. And two, Carnell, I think, has the mind that could not just transcend his own position being a positional coach. I think Carnell one day, if he chooses to, could have the mind to be a head coach, and a darn good one at that. So learning underneath various coaches who have that cultural style, who are having a good record like Brian Harsin has here, it makes sense. As for Kevin Steele, I really don't think the Auburn fan base gave him a fair shot. I really don't think they did. We saw several times throughout the season, Corey, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Auburn fans, but the last thing that I remember from Kevin Steele throughout various games is Kevin saying in various interviews, yeah, we may have gotten burned on this play or that play. Or maybe it was the game versus Georgia, I think, that he said something along the lines of, yes, we're not performing well, but that also means that we have motivation to improve. It's the right mindset that he has. I just don't think he's in the right position right now to capitalize on it.
Well, you know, moving forward with the Auburn Tigers program, he's going to have to make sure that he does secure an outstanding coaching staff. And none other, I saw it on social media yesterday, where DeMarco McNeil may have some interest in becoming a position coach at Auburn, maybe even Willie Anderson, because it's a situation to where the offensive line, when you look across the state at what the University of Alabama has always been able to accomplish and probably having one of the best offensive lines in the country, you want to get the brightest and the best assistant coaches. And DeMarco McNeil, the former Blount High School Mr. Football in the state of Alabama, he's an Auburn man. He knows, being on the staff at South Carolina as an analyst, he knows what to expect. But again, those position coaches and the relationships that he builds due to this pandemic are going to be essential in Auburn's program moving forward. I want to kind of give you a highlight of what we're going to talk about tonight in Sports Night. Of course, in our last segment, we're going to give you a 2020 sports recap and what this incredible pandemic has done not only to our sporting events, but on a local level, but even on a global level. We'll talk about that in the last segment. And we always love to hear from you. 251-343-0106 is how you can reach us on Sports Night. And a lot of interesting things going into the second segment, talking about Alabama football. I mean, it's where do you begin? Because for this entire first segment, we talked about Auburn and who they have hired as far as their head coach. But we'll talk about Alabama assistant coaches and the awards that will continue to trickle in, not only for the players, but for the offensive coordinator staff. We'll talk about the Heisman finalist and the record-setting pace that Alabama has made. And for the last decade, it's just Alabama head and shoulders above everybody else in regards to not only recruiting. The rich get richer this week, as Alabama was able to secure on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve another five-star running back from the state of Texas. It was between Oklahoma and Texas for this five-star running back. Another running back to just Alabama, so the rich get richer there. And coming up in the next segment, we will talk about the Heisman finalist and the debate. Will Mac Jones and DeVonta Smith split votes, or will Kyle Trask and some quarterback named Trevor Lawrence from Clemson have an opportunity to win the Heisman. That's what we'll talk about in the next segment of Sports Night. You're listening to Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. I'm Corey LeBounty, joined with N. Blair. Join us for the next segment, talking a little Crimson Tide football.
Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead, this is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night.
Man, I tell you, Corey, Dalton, I understand the music that he likes to put in these bumps. But sometimes, whenever we try to have a high-action vibe, of course, you know, the opening, do you want action? Like, we need to keep that going all the way, and then we have Knee Deep come on, and I'm not knocking the song. It's a good one, but
we'll change it up a little bit in 2021.
We have to.
We'll do it.
Imagine Dragons, see what we can do there. All right. Well, before we get started talking about the college football playoffs, the Heisman winners, we had a caller call in, Eddie, wanting to talk about the Auburn hire a bit. Eddie, are you on the line?
Yeah, man. Hey, guys. I've been quiet away a few weeks. I went to Auburn, but guys, we got to have realistic expectations. Y'all talked about we're going to the Citrus Bowl.
Yes.
Anybody else in any other school would be fine and dandy going with that. Gus did a hell of a job while he was here. I mean, we don't have Nick Saban. I'm sorry to say it, but we don't.
Correct.
He's the greatest coach of all time. We've got to have realistic expectations. Now, my question to you is this, and I don't know. In Gus's contract, since we fired him and we paid him to go home, can he go to Tennessee without paying us anything back?
You know, I guarantee that Tennessee or whatever school he would get picked up would have to eat that contract. That's why you saw Butch Jones not coach anywhere when he was continuing to collect money from Tennessee when he was fired. So I don't think that you'll see Coach Malzahn coach immediately because another school would probably have to pick up some of that contract and he would not get paid in full. Now, if you're an Auburn faithful, I'm quite sure you would want another school to try to buy out that contract. And it's a situation to where, is it that splash hire for the new head football coach at Auburn and Coach Harsin? No, I don't think it's that splash hire, but you're absolutely right. I think Auburn's in a situation to where, as long as Alabama continues to have the levels of success, not only recruiting, but at the end of the day, winning football games, then Auburn will continue to struggle. And the best thing that can happen to him is for him to come in year one and beat Nick Saban in next year's Iron Bowl.
But here's the deal. Saban's probably going to retire for the next 4 years. I think that's a fair statement. If we were going all in, why didn't we go ahead and go after somebody like, you know, oh, God, what was the guy that was with Florida? Urban Meyer.
Seriously, why not?
You don't go in and go at it and you want to compete, man, take the money and get the guy you know that's beat him before, more than once.
I don't think that money – thank you for calling in and listening. Eddie, I don't think money was an issue for Auburn and them paying their next head football coach. I think it was a situation to where I don't know if Urban Meyer really had any interest in coaching at the collegiate level because I hear Urban Meyer's name mentioned for a possible NFL job and him wanting to throw his name in the NFL ranks. And I just think that Urban Meyer has done and accomplished everything that he could accomplish at the Floridas and Ohio States. And as far as was there a name out there that would have been a huge hire for Auburn this year, I don't think that name was out there. And I think this is somebody from the grassroots program who is going to have to go ahead and really, really earn his keep and earn his stripes, so to speak, for the Auburn Tigers and earn a lot of respect, not only in this state, but from the Auburn faithful who don't get an opportunity to see a lot of Boise State, who's located out there on the West Coast, because not a lot of people are up at 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night when those West Coast games come on. So they haven't had an opportunity to experience him. And when he was an assistant coach at Arkansas State, prior to going back to Boise State, I think that he made his mark from being an offensive guy, and I think he'll continue to develop Bo Nix at Auburn, which is something that Auburn needs tremendously in quarterback development. And they do have the offensive weapons, but you're right. Playing in the Citrus Bowl game, that's not something that Auburn fans really want to hang their hat on, and it's something that maybe can happen every third or fourth year, but Auburn wants to compete for national championships, especially when they see Alabama compete for national championships. And speaking of Alabama, Steve Sarkisian was named the nation's top assistant coach in his second full year as offensive coordinator at the University of Alabama, winning the Broyles Award. And this was an award to where New South Alabama head football coach Kane Womack was a finalist for, and you would have liked to seen our guy here at the University of South Alabama win that award. But Alabama is just continuing to rack in all the postseason awards, as again, he was named the Broyles Award winner today. And Alabama also placed 6 AP First Team All-Americans on the list today. Najee Harris, Devontae Smith, Mac Jones, Alex Leatherwood, Landon Dickerson, and Patrick Surtain, the second, all named first team AP All-Americans, and there's nothing new to that list. You probably left off one or two guys that could have been first team All-Americans when you're so loaded at offense.
Well, I tell you, there's a guy that he doesn't exactly sprint. He kind of does a bit of a penguin waddle. If you catch my drift, if Waddle doesn't go down with that injury, I am fairly confident that that number goes up to 7 without a problem there.
And it's a situation for Alabama to where when the finalist awards were named late last week and Alabama's Najee Harris comes in at number 5, you're like, okay, well, you know Mac Jones and Devontae Smith are right there in the mix. It was a question of who were going to be the other two, and I think Najee could have easily been a top 3 or 4 winner or finish 4th in the Heisman because of what he's been able to accomplish in his career at the University of Alabama. But when you start saying Mac Jones and Devontae Smith, people want to argue that Trevor Lawrence is the best collegiate player this season. I'm not knocking Trevor Lawrence. I think he is going to definitely be the number 1 overall draft pick in this NFL draft that's getting ready to come up. But to be the best college football player this year, I think that either goes to Devontae Smith or Mac Jones. Devontae Smith's not going to catch the passes that he does without Mac Jones putting him on the money. And Devontae was able to climb the ladder and make the catch of the year, to me, for the University of Alabama in that LSU game. And he continues to solidify his bag as to why he came back for his senior season. And I respect Devontae and Najee both tremendously for coming back to go ahead and finish not only their degree, but feeling that they had more to prove and more to give back to the University of Alabama. And in the history of college football, when you start talking about the possibility of 2 offensive teammates finishing 1, 2, and possibly 5 in the Heisman Trophy voting, that is incredible. And I really just don't see that happening ever again. And it's something that we have not seen in.
Well, I would say that the Heisman is the main goal for a lot of these players. I don't think that Devontae Smith and Mac Jones are going to split votes here, and I'm hoping that they don't. Clearly, the biggest playmaker out there has been Devontae Smith, and I think you would agree with me on that, right? So if that's the case, then we have to look at, okay, if it's Devontae number 1, say Mac goes number 2, who comes in at 3rd, who comes in at 4th? Because I've seen some people, such as, you know, some guests on either the Feinbaum show who are played on here on the radio before us, or just even people around town, you know, just having passing conversation about sports in general. I have seen professional writers, Corey, with decades on the job, try to exclude one name from this Heisman conversation, and that is Kyle Trask.
Kyle Trask's numbers were very solid. I think that when you start looking at he and Mac Jones head-to-head, the type of numbers that both of those guys put up in the SEC championship game was spectacular. And Kyle Trask, he's been consistent all season long. He's done it with prolific wide receivers. And speaking of the Florida Gators, we'll jump right in there with Kyle Trask. He won't have few of his main targets as the Gators' Kadarius Toney, Blount High School's own, leads the team in receiving yards, leads the team in catches, and leads the wide receivers in touchdowns. He and Trayvon Grimes join wide receiver Kyle Pitts and go ahead and opting out for the Cotton Bowl versus Oklahoma. So it takes a little, to me, a little of the luster off of that game, that where you wanted to see Oklahoma and Florida. How would Florida be able to bounce back? What would Oklahoma bring? Because there was some talk with Oklahoma having two losses early in the season. Some people thought that they belonged as a top five team in the country, but I think that's going to hurt the Florida Gators. Anytime you have four out of your top five wide receivers not playing in the Cotton Bowl, that's going to be huge. Now, I know the Heisman Trophy voting ballots have already been submitted and turned in, so you won't have to wait to see Kyle Trask to see whether he struggles or not in the Cotton Bowl. But I do think that Mac Jones will continue to flourish. Devontae Smith will continue to flourish, along with Najee Harris. And you just see that all the awards that continue to pile in, not only for Nick Saban, but for the rest of the Alabama Crimson Tide, will continue to roll on as we go into 2021. Coming up after the break, we'll talk a little NFL action and wrap up 2020 sporting events.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. I'm Corey LeBounty, joined by Ian Blair. A pleasure joining you this last Monday night show of the 2020 season. And we're wrapping up our bowl games in the SEC. They have not got started yet. You look at Iowa versus Missouri in the Music City Bowl. Of course, it got canceled on yesterday. And I mentioned Florida playing Oklahoma. That was a 7-6 matchup. Looking forward to that on the 30th of December. And Tulsa, Mississippi State play New Year's Eve. Arkansas and TCU scheduled also to play New Year's Eve. And then New Year's Day, that Georgia-Cincinnati game, and we talked about it 1 week ago on this show. If a non-Power 5 school was going to get in to the top four, it would have been this year, and Cincinnati is going to have something to try to prove against the Georgia Bulldogs. Cincinnati being 9-0, Georgia at 7-2. Auburn takes on Northwestern in the Citrus Bowl. Notre Dame takes on Alabama. And then on Saturday, January 2nd, NC State and Kentucky play in the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl. Ole Miss and Indiana in the Outback Bowl. And Texas A&M take on North Carolina in the Capital One Orange Bowl. And that kind of gives us a matchup of our bowl games that are coming up. I expect it to be an Alabama versus Clemson national championship game. We'll see how my prediction holds through this next week. And Ian, who do you think's going to play in the national championship?
I have Alabama and a shocker. An absolute shocker. No, it's going to be Alabama and Clemson, people. Let's be honest here. The two best teams will make it yet again. And for those of you who are going to be a little crybabies about it, oh no, we don't like the same two teams, you got to beat them either way. So you might as well have a program that will be built up that will then contend with these programs for years. I get it. The team selection may not have been the greatest this year, and I know a lot of people are heated about that, myself included. But the fact of the matter remains, Alabama and Clemson were still locks, and regardless of whatever two teams that you build and put into that playoff, Alabama and Clemson would still meet in the playoffs 10 times out of 10, in my opinion.
Well, transitioning from college football over to the NFL, I know on Christmas Day, I sat and watched Alvin Kamara score 6 touchdowns and tie the NFL record as the Saints beat the Vikings 52-33. And Alvin Kamara has kind of made his own mark for himself as the Saints continue to roll on, being 11-4, 6-2 at home. That was just an outstanding performance, and one that we just have not seen in over 60 or 70 years of NFL football.
I mean, when you want to talk about a scoring machine, there is a difference between being a machine and a Terminator, and I think Kamara is starting to awaken that potential that the Saints saw whenever they drafted him. And now it's getting to the point where Kamara is starting to cross that line from being a scoring machine into a scoring terminator who you do not want to face. I'm starting to hear his name kind of rumble around in conversations with guys like Derrick Henry. You know, guys that are at the top of the game when it comes to being the top rushers, the top receivers. Kamara has definitely put his, shall I say, hat in the ring, so to speak. And it's actually been a blessing to watch. If you learn to appreciate greatness, you will understand how to appreciate Alvin Kamara, especially after 6 touchdowns scored in a game. Astronomical.
Last night I had an opportunity to watch the Tennessee Titans, Dalton Orwick's team right there, take a loss in the Winter Wonderland in Green Bay. And you look at the big back, Derrick Henry, was 2 yards away from getting and rushing for over 100 yards, which he was trying to surpass Barry Sanders for the most consecutive games for 100 yards rushing, and was not able to do it. But I saw some exciting football, not only on Christmas Day. I also saw the Dolphins come back after they benched Tua Tagovailoa. Ryan Fitzpatrick comes in and has a little Fitz magic, leads them to a game-winning drive as they eliminate the Las Vegas Raiders. And that game was a lot of fun to watch because you just really thought the Dolphins didn't have enough to get it done. And here it is with Tua for the second time this year being benched after kind of lacking an offensive production, but the Dolphins finding a way to get that big W.
I mean, as an Alabama homer myself, it is kind of alarming, if not very alarming, for Dolphins fans that the QB who you are hoping to guide your franchise for the next 10, 12, 15 years, hopefully, has been benched now, like you said, twice in favor of Fitzpatrick. But I think this is just a growing pain for Tua. He's got to get back into it, learn how to deliver consistently in the NFL, try to learn the offense, and try to just get a feel for things. He's a rookie, so don't call him a bust. Give him some time. You got to be patient. Which, speaking of patience, I'm glad your team was able to come back and get a win this week, Corey.
No question. I think your team would be the Atlanta Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
And I think their overall record is 4-11. They're in the last place in the NFC South, just probably looking forward to next year, as I know Julio Jones did not get a start.
A hamstring injury is what is believed to have kept him out these last few weeks. And I believe, yeah, we do have some time here. Do you mind if I've got a part two to a letter that I started earlier this season, and I was hoping to get to wrap up the season on some final thoughts. Do you mind if I share this letter at all?
You can go ahead and close the book on the Atlanta Falcons, because they need a head coach first and foremost. So I hope somewhere in your letter you're addressing them needing a head football coach.
Well, it's not just the coaches that we need to address. Atlanta Falcons, congratulations. You can print out a certificate and put it on your wall. I'll even pay the shipping fee from my house to your headquarters so that way you can put it up in Dan Quinn's old office for the next guy that walks in. You are the biggest chokers in the history of the National Football League. Congratulations. I mean, I have to clap for you on this. I don't even know how this is possible. A.J. Terrell goes up to try to intercept the ball. This is game time, baby. First round pick, A.J. Terrell looking to make a mark on what has been a horrible season defensively for the Falcons. A.J. Terrell, I felt like at least, was one of the bright spots on that secondary. A.J. Terrell wanting to have a signature rookie moment. Signature moment. I was hyped up out of my chair. I'm like, all right, he got it. And then the ball goes from your hand to your chest, bounces up into your hands again, and then you lose it. Why are you even playing with gloves if you aren't going to catch the football like that? You have butterfingers on your hands, AJ.
I think the bigger question for the Atlanta Falcons is when you start looking at their overall record at 4-11 is how are they going to get better? Who do you think should be the next Atlanta Falcons head coach, Ian? Because you have an offseason. You have a virtual draft that's getting ready to come in April. We know that the New York Jets will not have the number one overall pick. That's going to go to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who probably will draft Trevor Lawrence. And I know a lot of Jets fans were pretty upset about it. But who is going to be the next head football coach of the Atlanta Falcons?
You know, I've had some theories about it, but one thing I will say on air that I am confident in saying is I sure hope that it is not an in-house hire. I mean, this defense has been absolutely atrocious. It's been more diluted than the Gatorade that the players are drinking on the sideline. It's so bad. Let's go through some stats here. You a stats guy? I like stats. So This is just from this season, by the way. I'm not even going to list what happened in the last few seasons here. Most, literally top of the league in points allowed per game on the defensive end. They were top in terms of total yards per game allowed, 29th in yards per play, 18th in total turnovers, allowed the fifth most total yards in the league itself, and the defense itself was only 23rd in expected points gained at negative 119. Now, that's me just talking about the defense itself, but I could go on here. But one thing I will say is, please do not let this be an in-house hire. Please.
Well, I'm just happy that the Atlanta Falcons have Ito Smith on the roster, the young man from McGill-Tulane who played his collegiate football at Southern Miss, and they did draft Ito Smith, and I want to continue to see Ito Smith do well. And I know my best friend, Gene Smith, who's listening to us in Houston, Texas. He's a big Houston, Texas fans, and in the AFC South at 4-11 also are the Houston Texans, and they're not doing as bad as the Jacksonville Jaguars are, who are 1-14, but I respect what J.J. Watt said at the podium on yesterday. If you didn't have an opportunity to listen to J.J. Watt's comments after the Houston Texans lost yesterday, basically he was saying, hey, even though we're 4-11, we get paid a lot of money to do what we do. Take pride in your job and take pride that the fans spend their hard-earned money on our jerseys to come to our games. And there's no reason for you to take a practice off. There's no reason for you to take a game off. You need to give it everything that you have. And if you're able to do that, we wouldn't be 4-11 in second to last place in the AFC South. But I like it when your superstars come out and not only call out their teammates, but call out the organization, because J.J. Watt has meant so much to the Houston Texans and the city of Houston and the state of Texas, for that matter, and everything that he's done with his philanthropy. I love the fact that J.J. Watt calls out his team and really expects more from the guys each and every Sunday.
I think that's something that every team could take note of. Have your star players not only be great at the game, but also be great leaders and to be vocal.
And being vocal today, the Washington football team, they released Dwayne Haskins, who was the number 15 player selected in the 2019 NFL draft, was the starting quarterback for them, got caught with his girlfriend at a strip club establishment without a mask on, not adhering to the COVID-19 protocols, and has really been a distraction, was not selected by the head coach Ron Rivera, who came in for Coach Gruden and inherited him. But in order for Washington football program to move forward in that organization, they made a tough decision today to release Dwayne Haskins, who again was the number 15 player drafted in the 2019 draft. So moving forward, we'll see what the Washington football team will be able to do. In our last segment tonight on Sports Night, we're going to talk about the 2020 sporting events. What was the biggest sporting event that happened in 2020, or the biggest sporting event that did not happen? You're listening to Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. Corey and Ian bringing it to you.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to the final segment of 2020 for Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. I'm Corey LeBounty, joined by my extraordinary producer, Ian Blair. And if you couldn't hear it or did not tell, could not tell, he is a tremendous Atlanta Falcons fan, and he just wants his team to continue to get better. And, you know, just a couple of years removed from a Super Bowl and possibly could have won that Super Bowl. But, you know, 2020 brought so many different events to us in so many different ways, and you can't mention the word 2020. It is the new cuss word to me when you say 2020 moving forward, and I know a lot of us are looking forward to putting that behind us, and would love to hear from you guys. 251-343-0106. What do you feel was the biggest 2020 sporting event headline? And I'm just going to jump right out there and start off by saying I think COVID-19 stopping sporting events across the world in March was the biggest headline in the sporting events. You know, having no fans in the stands once games did resume, whether it was in Major League Baseball, because Major League Baseball, we're so used to spring training being right around the corner in March and April, did not happen. Major League Baseball doesn't start until almost late June, early July. And then you're talking about March Madness not even occurring. The conference tournaments just stopping at halftime of one game, and a lot of conference tournaments not even being able to be concluded. No Olympics in 2020. Looking forward to that in 2021, because again, this is a global pandemic that we were dealing with, and not even quite sure how they're going to go ahead and have the 2021 Olympics and what they're going to look like moving forward. But athletes becoming activists, to me, was another huge story of 2020. Whether it was LeBron James, whether it was the NCAA student athletes wanting to get paid for their name, likeness, and image, and the NCAA changing its policy on student athletes getting ready to be paid. Naomi Osaka winning her second U.S. Open title in September. And she did so with different masks, honoring Black Americans killed during violent altercations. I think that that was awesome, and her stance that she took. There being a bubble in, and what do I mean by there being a bubble? The NBA played with no fans inside of a bubble in Orlando, meaning you couldn't enter it or exit it. And if you did, you had to sit out for 2 weeks. And the Los Angeles Lakers winning the NBA World Championship in Orlando at Disney World in front of no fans, I thought that that just was amazing to me to hear and to see. Going back to what happened in early January, Kobe Bryant's death, I think, really got overshadowed by COVID, because starting the year, back January 26th, when we found out the horrendous and horrific news about Kobe Bryant and the others dying in the helicopter plane crash, it kind of put sports at a standstill, because Kobe Bryant was honored by all sports, whether it was soccer, whether it was tennis, whether it was golf. Everybody just stopped to pause to talk about the greatness of number 8 or number 24 or just Kobe Bryant in general, and that started the year just as a shocker, and you just didn't feel that it could get any worse. And that's when COVID-19 kind of started rearing its head. We've had so many tremendous losses in the sporting world this year. Also, on a positive note, you start talking about Sarah Fuller becoming the first female kicker from Vanderbilt, which makes my mom, Sarah Lynn Andrews, very happy to see a kicker from Vanderbilt being and given the opportunity to be the first female kicker in a Power 5 conference to score and actually making an extra point. So many different events that took place in 2020 that were spectacular. Again, would love to hear from you. 251-343-0106 to hear what you thought was one of the most spectacular sporting events that took place in 2020. I know one that really broke my heart was, again, just no March Madness taking place. We have a caller on the line. Caller, good evening and welcome to Sports Night.
Hey,
All right, we have a guest for the next show that called in, and their sporting event was probably pretty big also, but March Madness, again, being part of the 64 teams not having an opportunity to participate, I think the NCAA made the right decision by allowing these student athletes to have an extra year of eligibility, because when you have something that's taken away, the high school athletes who had their spring sports and their summer sports taken away from them could not get an extra year of eligibility. But the NCAA, which makes so many wrong decisions, finally made a right decision by allowing these student athletes not only to get paid by their name, image, and likeness, but also having the ability to come back to become a fifth or sixth year senior also in.
Well, I tell you, I still remember the week where COVID was first announced, and I was a senior in high school, and I was getting my homework done. I came to go watch a Warriors game, I think that Tuesday night, and it was announced earlier that day that things were going to be a bit different. No fans in the stands. This COVID thing was starting to crack down, and by Wednesday morning, probably around noon, the news broke that Rudy Gobert had infected the locker room with about 9 other players potentially being exposed. And the next thing you know, all of not just sports, but schools, businesses, it all started that week. And over the course of about 48 hours, my graduation was handed to me in a diploma in the dadgum mailbox, along with hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of other seniors just like me who really wanted to see that graduation through. So I would say the biggest event overall was partially COVID, but also I would have to commend at least the NBA on this. They found a way, and they, even though it was a bubble and some people thought it wouldn't work and all this stuff, and one person being exposed could have popped the whole thing, pun not intended. And Lou Williams almost did it himself, let's not forget here, but ultimately, it's the fact that even through all the distractions, I just want to take a minute to commemorate the people who went out there and achieved some sort of success, made the playoffs, achieved their goals, what have you, whether in sports or anything else. Amidst all the distractions, amidst all of the outside chaos, noise, etc., you found a way to lock in. You found a way to get focused, and whether it was drawing on the energy of idols past or it was drawing on the energy of those around you, you found a way to rise above and still be a champion. So, I mean, if it's anybody that should be congratulated, I would say that if one event, it would be the championships in general, Eric Gordon.
I agree. And like I said, so many legends lost, whether it's Pat Dye or Georgetown's John Thompson, Don Shula, Gale Sayers. We mentioned Kobe Bryant. I mean, Bob Gibson, a Hall of Famer. Curly Neal from the Harlem Globetrotters. Phyllis George, who did an outstanding job on her CBS pregame show in the NFL. So many names continue to go on that will be missed, that touch so many of our lives, and it just goes to show we want Sports Night to continue to be a part of your life in 2021, and we want to wish everyone a very happy new year moving forward, a very prosperous and happy new year moving forward in 2021. Thank you for listening to Sports Night. This has been Corey LeBounty and Ian Blair.